This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Good morning and welcome to Flatting Today here on Manawatu People's Radio. And this time it's just myself, Daniel, from the Tenants Union, as Cam is off having adventures down in Masterton, you know, having a chat with some of the councils and people down there, letting them know that we are about and able to be helpful. And for some of the listeners, it might be news that Cam is making his way off to Etu, and so he won't be working with us at the Tenants Union anymore, although I'm sure you'll hear him plenty often on the Union's Manawatu and probably the Malgra shows instead. So you still get to enjoy him, but for now, you're just stuck with me. And on that note, if you need to get in touch with us, it's the usual 0800 250 022 if you happen to be outside of Palmerston North. Otherwise, 0635 77435. Or just pop up and visit us at the office, 77 King Street, second story of Hancock Community House. And email works perfectly good and fine as well, with info@tenantsunion.org.nz. And of course, we have all the usual social media things with Facebook and Instagram and web page and all that sort as well. So jump on and get in touch with just whatever fits your fancy at the particular point in time. But anyway, for our wee natter today, I'm going to be talking a wee bit about all of the fun things that we've got to hear about the housing done in Dunedin, Otago, down that sort of way. Particularly because we have quite the bit of a cold snap at the moment. It's been very chilly the last few days up here in the Manawatu too, and distinctly worse down there, although it would be nice to have a bit of snow again. At least it's a bit more of a novelty this way. So down there, particularly in the student flats, I know this is not a new problem. It's one that's been ongoing, and it seems to be coming up almost every year. But just that whole, they're students, they can live in cold, damp housing, which is a case of, no, it's a terrible idea. It isn't a rite of passage. It's just making people suffer for basically making profit. Because part of the trouble is that their houses aren't sealed very well. They're not insulated. And even when you meet the Healthy Home standards, there is a lot of potential gaps that can be popped into there. So that means things like gaps in the walls, perfectly fine, as long as they are not thicker than a $2 coin. And that can still be a lot of gaps. So, you know, if it's not moving the flame, it's a bit of a rule of thumb, or blowing it out, then it's normally kind of fine. But that doesn't make it so that there's not a draft. There's still very much a draft there. And again, there is the note that giving a bit of breathing space for houses is perfectly viable too, but they don't tend to need quite that much, because as some of the students down there have reported, especially with the high power prices at the moment, put on the heat pump for about 15 minutes as best you can, and then wrap up. And then, of course, all the heat's normally gone by about half an hour, and everything's cold again, which, you know, not all that great. It's if it's not actually holding the heating, which is kind of the point of the entire insulation and getting rid of all those gaps. But it does also remind me, just as I'm following all sorts of tangents and I've only barely started, heat pumps don't tend to work particularly well if you blast them on as high as possible, even just for a short time. It's sort of like expecting someone to do a bit of a sprint every now and again and then stop and do nothing and then sprint lots, which can be a wee bit tiring. It works a lot better if you let them just work slowly over a long period of time. But it doesn't tend to matter too much when it's a case of power being quite as expensive as it happens to be, particularly in this cold weather. You kind of just have to make do with whatever you can manage. But of course, that's another matter altogether. So after we end up with that sort of trouble, it's also worth a note that it's very easy to build a house that does not need to meet healthy homes standards, because you can make it so it doesn't require, or it's exempt from basically everything. So if you put it on a concrete base, you don't need underfloor insulation. And of course, you can't put in the polyurethane. If you give it a flat roof, you can't put any roof insulation in either, or ceiling insulation. And you don't need to put in the walls. Double glazing is not required. And so just from that, you already end up with a small box that has no insulation whatsoever. And as long as all your gaps, you can't put that coin through, then it's fine there too. But when you think about that, that is not a particularly warm and comfortable house, even with popping in a heating that could reach 18 degrees on the coldest day. And that's the thing, of course. As long as it can reach that point, it doesn't matter how expensive it is to be able to get there. All it needs to meet the standards is the ability to do it. It doesn't need to get any higher. So 18 degrees inside is not particularly warm. Admittedly, for your average healthy adult, it's fine. But for a older person or a younger person, they've got some problems, because that's not quite suitable according to the UN recommendations. So, of course, the standards happen to be lower than that, which is not ideal. And people are definitely feeling it at the moment in down Otago Way, as, you know, just as cold on the inside as it is on the outside, with all of those gaps and things and the lack of insulation. And even what is there is insufficient. So, of course, as what happens when you're living constantly in very cold conditions, you tend to get sick a lot more often, which is a wee bit of a bother when you're trying to do all of your study and, you know, building up your skills to contribute to the future of Aotearoa. And, hey, if you're too sick to be able to do it because you've got shoddy housing that isn't any good, you're not going to have quite so good learning, less good grades, all that sort of thing. And so it's kind of like forcing people to go through this arbitrary rite of passage, which is kind of silly and nonsensical. And as a result, getting everything else worse off into the future. It's just a case of there's no point. We shouldn't be treating anybody like this. And this is, again, something that has been said over and over and over again, not only by us here at the Tenants' Union, but all of the student unions all about the place. And admittedly, in some areas, it's getting better. But as noted in Otago at the moment, it isn't necessarily. Now, it is worth a note that some of these cases is because of very old housing that's maybe been a bit light on its maintenance over the years, but also very difficult to retrofit. But I mean, that's always one of those problems of, yes, it is a concern. It just means that you're going to have to figure something else out. Because again, you still can't have people living in those sorts of conditions. And just because the house looks particularly nice outside and it's going to be expensive, doesn't mean that you can ignore it. As we've said plenty of times before as well, the whole a renter, by definition, generally doesn't have a asset or some great big cash backing, whereas the person who owned the house definitely does. And if you can't afford to make that house livable, then you probably shouldn't be renting it out as a house, because that is still your business and you would be providing a shoddy product. But, you know, we'll have to see what happens on that front. There are, of course, a few things that can be done about it. I mean, apart from just making the homes livable and upping things like the healthy home standards, because even though they're definitely not quite working in those sorts of circumstances, they do fall a bit short everywhere else as well. And I'm sure many renters in Palmerston North, even on a reasonably comfortable but cold day, are definitely feeling it inside. We've had plenty of people come through the office with mouldy, drafty homes still after all, and limited things that they can actually do about it, especially because, you know, deciding if it fits or not, or at least it meets the standards, is often determined by the property owner beforehand. And it's just a nice little signature on the certificate. We've definitely had plenty of cases where a house may have met the standards like 5 years ago, but it hasn't been maintained and it doesn't anymore. And then, of course, the property owner is being very grumbly, but, oh, no, it does meet it and I don't need to do anything. I say, oh, yes, it turns out that you do. You just didn't check. Which is one of those encouragements for the next bit in having a independent body actually check these things, like a housing warrant of fitness, which I know we've talked about a lot as well, and also has been supported by the old University of Otago down in Wellington in the health school there, particularly through Philippa Chapman Halden, I think, is the main head up on that one, leading all that through. But I'm not sure if we're going to get a government keen on pushing any of that through unless the Greens happen to come along, because I think they're pretty keen on that as well. And that would be quite helpful. But for other possible techniques, there is, you know, subsidising some of this housing again, which is a matter of a lot of the healthy home standard insulation, all that sort of stuff was subsidised, and a lot of property owners, or maybe not a lot, but definitely a non-zero number, decided to faff about until they no longer got the subsidy and then complained about it. So I don't think we can rely on that. And again, they do have a pretty hefty asset and they're getting a reasonable return on it into the future. There is always a bit of the argument on covering mortgage and all that sort of thing. But then again, if you are investing and providing these sorts of houses, then maybe putting everything on just one is not the best idea, and more moving towards more a professional property owner sort of provider would be a better idea to go about it anyway. So then you're spreading those costs over a wider number of houses and able to cross-subsidize the rents. So everybody pays lower rents and you're still making a pretty hefty profit. But our current housing system is not quite suitable or set up for that one. But maybe in the future, who knows? One of the things that did come across in the recent information around the Otago houses in particular is basically making them airtight. And that one used a very interesting sort of technique by the looks, in which all the stuff gets pulled out, all the furniture and things, and it gets pumped full of a sort of misty type thing, or at least put along the cracks, and the pressure is increased in the house. And so all the pressure tries to escape through the cracks, pulls out the substance, and it all forms up in the little holes and fills them up quite nicely. And that seemed to do the trick quite well, although it is pretty expensive, relatively new, and all that sort of thing. And I'm sure that's only one of many of the different possibilities, but it is one that does come to mind. And I mean, part of the trouble is just making sure it's not the tenants who have to report on all the different problems. and have someone else do it, so it doesn't have that the balance of power problem. That is constantly a concern in all these renting things, because it's very hard to complain about something when, of course, it is your the person who controls your house decides on whether they want to listen to it or not. Of course, that's one of the spots that we can help out with a wee bit more in supporting renters who do happen to have houses that are cold and mouldy and wet and all that sort of thing, to try and enforce some of those rights and push it through the appropriate channels. Normally what you'd start with is a 14-day notice, and then if that is consistently ignored, going through a tenancy tribunal. But there is the possibility of, I think it's about $5,000 exemplary damages for every instance of failure on the healthy home standards. So, you know, it's not too shabby. And sometimes, if you're really lucky, you also get a rebate on some of the rent paid because it's not quite suitable. And work order to force it to actually happen. And as always, the trouble is if you have to take your property owner to the tenancy tribunal to get anything done, then that relationship is often a bit looking squiggly. And it doesn't necessarily indicate that they're going to do any work into the future either, which would be quite helpful next time something happens and needs to be fixed. But of course, that is another matter entirely. And as always, you sort of reach that point and cross that bridge when you come to it. But it's even worse just living in terrible conditions because you're too afraid to potentially lose the house. You can lose your health and all your education opportunities and your ability to work instead, which is also not ideal, especially when you're paying like $400 for the privilege if you happen to be living in a one-bedroom house by yourself. I think the last time I looked, they were around $350 for a single bedroom, if you happen to be on the cheaper side of things. So, you know, it's still not particularly cheap. But, you know, that's the rental market at the moment. And I know that at the moment we're talking about things being too cold in particular because we're in the middle of winter and it's been very, very chilly. But there is the extra problem on the other side, because summer's going to be coming along very shortly and it's probably going to be a very, very warm one. And this is probably going to be a topic for another. But there is, we don't have much on the keeping things cool when it is too hot, because that is not covered by the healthy home standards. It only looks at whether or not it is too cold. And the building code is not particularly set up for things being too hot either. But these are all things that we're definitely going to need to be thinking about sooner rather than later, given the tendency for temperatures at the moment. Whoever you want to blame, I mean, I'm definitely going to say that it's humans contributing to this one, but regardless, the temperatures have been going up, and we're going to have to make sure our buildings fit regardless. But anyway, I think we'll have to leave it at that for today. It's a wee bit shorter than our normal one, but then it's just me nattering this time round. So hopefully I'll have a wee bit more for you all next time, and maybe we'll get one last visit from Cam before he moves on to his next big thing. But for now, if you need any help with any tenancy-related things, just feel free to get in touch with us at the Tenants Union on 06-3577-435, or if you happen to be outside the area, that's an 0800-250-022. And I think the answer machine still actually has Kevin on it, so if you've missed his Irish tones, or you can send us an email at info@tenantsunion.org.nz. And visiting us up in Hancock Community House is also perfectly good and fine as well. Our office is open between 10 and 3. And sometimes you'll be lucky enough to find us in a little bit outside those, so just knock on the door and we'll lend a hand if we can. But anyway, I hope you're going to enjoy the rest of your day, and all the best with all your tenancy fun. So ta-ta for now.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.